Well, your mama is
Hold
so...
Hold it, wait a minute. Don't bring anyone mother into this.
Hello, and welcome to Mothers and Others, the podcast about maternal figures and mommy issues. I'm Julian.
And I'm Caro.
And today with us, we have our friend Laura.
Hi, I'm Laura.
The mother goddess. She's so interesting to me as a figure because I feel like if you come to her only having known a very extremely patriarchal idea of faith, it seems like a revelation.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up a Catholic, so I kind of already have a mother goddess. Mm-hmm. And so this kind of earth mother goddess who's kind of... It's weird because, like, all the criticisms I could make about the mother goddess in general are absolutely true about Mary of Nazareth. But so, you know, it's easier for me to see, like, kind of her whole thing is having babies and, you know, defining womanhood via motherhood. And that's messed up. Kind of regressive, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the same way, yeah, like you just said, there's all the criticisms you can have of neo-pagan conceptions of the mother goddess can also apply to Mary.
But I love her.
I love her also. I guess now I have two thoughts. The triple goddess specifically. So there's the mother goddess in general, where womanhood is defined by motherhood. And then there's the mother goddess as situated in the triple goddess, where you have the maiden, then the mother, who's like the big one, and then the crone. And it fascinates me how that dynamic was taken up by radical feminists, because if you scratch that surface of, oh, we wanted to find womanhood in the divine because the concept of the divine has been so thoroughly masculinized, you scratch the surface of that and then you just come up with something that is pretty regressive, like you just said. Like, it's this idea of womanhood where you are the, like, alluring virgin, then you have sex with a man and you reproduce, and then you're an old lady.
Yes.
What's the crone supposed to do? Like, she's spoken of in, like, such a...
Well, she's wise, right?
Oh, sure. She's right. Yes, she's wise. She, like, sort of has all the cultural knowledge.
You've got a book right in front of you that says crone on it.
I know, but
perhaps.
I can't read and talk into a microphone at the same time. Oh, I just can't. Okay. I have this very, for folks listening, this very, like, woo-woo feminist book called The Crone, Woman of Age, Wisdom, and Power.
I love it.
By Barbara G. Walker.
Who is she?
Indeed. Those are very normative ideas of what the life cycle of a woman is. And yet it was seized upon by women who I think would categorize, like, still to this day, right? Like, not just in the 60s and 70s, but, like, ongoing women who very earnestly think of themselves as, like, feminist and subversive. And I just, that phenomenon, I'm not judging it, right? I'm not saying, like, it's bad. What is the power? Like, is it sort of putting a different spin on what are actually, like, the social expectations of womanhood, or?
Except that it excludes all the other kinds of, like, even literally, like, being a mom to a small human.
Of course, yeah.
So, for example, my partner and I are both cis ladies. I have zero interest in 3D printing a baby in my uterus and then pushing it out. That sounds
really
unpleasant.
Sorry, we're millennials. This is how we talk about birth.
Yes. I that sounds really unpleasant to me. Yeah. It sounds really exciting to my partner. I'm going to be a mom, not via that process.
Right, right.
And right. I'm going to be a mom. And think about all of the, like, trans women moms and the, like, adoptive moms and the, like, chosen family moms,
right?
And, like, why does right. your whole, like, even if you have this life cycle of being, like, a kid teenager and then being a mom and then being an old person, like, it still doesn't necessarily have to involve a uterus and a fetus.
You know, a lot of very smart and extremely correct people have criticized, you know, the use of Mary of Nazareth in, mm-hmm. in the Catholic faith as really regressive. Her whole deal is being a mom. She gives birth and then we skip some time. Something happens in between. We don't know. And all of a sudden her whole deal is, like, being sad. And so she's either, like, we don't actually know that she was a teenage girl, but for some reason it...
We love to think that, but you're right. There's no reason to believe that she was a teenager.
We assume she was a teenage mom. We don't really actually have any textual evidence for that.
We project a lot onto her. Like, we also imagine her as, like, a poor, unwed mother when I don't think there's like evidence scripturally that she was poor either. Like her family like had a house in Nazareth, just like a city.
I think that comes from the whole idea that she had to give birth in a manger, but I'm pretty sure that's
because the hotels were full.
The hotels were full.
They didn't because there was a book census. Ahead.
Everyone had to go. Yeah, everybody was descending on Bethlehem.
Right. So in modern terms, it's like she gave birth in a New York taxi. Which is a thing that happens, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would actually would be how it would happen nowadays. Anyway, so, you know, she has a baby and then she loses her only baby that we know of, I guess. And her whole thing is being like Our Lady of Sorrows. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty weird to have this person who's clearly very important, whose iconography is all over everything, and who we don't want to sort of say more about. But... I am a very naughty Catholic and have sort of made her my own, you know. I already know that she is like a delicious katamari of many goddess figures that were force converted to Catholicism. So she's problematic with a big P anyway. But I'm like my sad mom is definitely pro-choice. Like,
absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mary of Nazareth is pro-choice. I'm just...
Her decision, right, to birth the Messiah doesn't have meaning if it wasn't a choice that she made.
Right. Mm-hmm. She's the actual kind of the real deal. She made that decision. Yeah. She owned that. And she's so vague, you know, and so sad.
She's sad 99%. So I'm pulling this out of my ass and not even looking it up on my computer, which is right in front of me. But Mary has seven sorrows.
Yes.
And like most of them are, like you were saying, about the death of her son or like times in which Jesus has been in danger. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to me that, but she also has seven joys.
What are her seven joys?
I'm going to look them up.
Laura.
Okay, I have a question.
Yeah, yeah.
Does Mary have a maiden, mother, and crone phase? Because I feel like the Annunciation as portrayed, I've taken a bunch of art history, so I feel like the way that the Annunciation is portrayed, she's like a maiden there, and like her being a virgin is important, obviously, to a lot of people. I mean, not to everyone, but like a lot of people. And then she's a mother. And then is the like her grieving, is that like a crone phase? Or is that, am I making that up?
It's all sort of shuffled together. So I don't know. I think that is an interesting thing to think about, whether or not you can impose or have Mary fit into the maiden, mother, crone framework.
She's certainly a mother goddess.
She's certainly she's a mother goddess, right? She encompasses all of that.
Officially, we don't worship her. We venerate her above the other saints, but
yeah, real
below
Catholics
Christ.
Get real mad if you suggest that Mary is a goddess.
We just really like her more than all the other saints, but don't worship her. Naughty, naughty.
So her joys are the Annunciation. Which is when she decided to give birth to the Messiah. Mm-hmm. The birth of Jesus, the adoration of the Magi, the resurrection of Christ, the ascension of Christ to heaven, the Pentecost, which is the descent of the Holy Spirit onto the apostles and Mary, and then her Annunciation.
That's right.
Her ascension
so
into heaven.
Her soul doesn't go to heaven. Her whole freaking body goes to heaven. She's like one of, you know, the few who can do that.
Also, she was
but
born without
sin. But she's
not a goddess. Huh?
Sorry.
But right, she's divine. Her whole physical body is assumed to heaven, but
not
a goddess.
Not a goddess. Don't say she's a goddess.
So I, like Julian, this is why Julian and I made a podcast about moms, because both of us were raised Catholic. Now we're both like weird cultural Catholics who worship Mary as a mother goddess.
But in a gay way.
In an extremely gay and trans way. I know that we've been giving like Wiccans and witches a lot of shit so far, but like I privately think of myself as a witch. Like I'm definitely not like a real like devout Catholic, but Mary's really important to me because I've had this whole journey where when I was like 12, I was looking for the female in the divine because, you know, I was raised in a really progressive church, so I didn't have a whole lot of angst about being Catholic. But specifically, I was like, why can't women be priests? Why is God a man and not a lady? And So I, you know, found Wicca and like sort of mother goddesses, and that was really healing for me. And then, but I kind of realized over time as I just became more self-aware that I wanted like not just the vague mother goddess, I wanted a goddess who has a name, who looks like something, who does things, and like all the other goddesses that sort of Wiccans tend to look at or worship or talk about are appropriated, from other cultures. And I was like, none of these goddesses are my goddess.
Right.
But I already had one all along. And so now we're reunited.
The real mother goddess.
The real mother goddess. Well, at least mine, right?
Was the sad lady
culturally,
we knew along the way.
Culturally, she's my mother goddess, mom, right. Sad mom. But I have a great joke that my Catholic grandmother likes to tell.
Go on.
This relates to veneration or worship of Mary as not a goddess, but definitely a goddess.
Wink.
So some construction workers were working inside a church on some renovation. So they were up on scaffolds. And the church was empty, but then a nun came in. And she did not see them because she didn't look up. And she just kneeled and started to pray. And the construction workers decided to mess with her because she had not seen them. So they started to go, "Ooh, it's me, Jesus." But the nun didn't respond or react or even look up. So they tried again. And they said, "Ooh, it's me, it's Jesus. I can hear your prayers." And still the nun didn't respond. So they tried one more time. "Ooh, it's me. It's Jesus. I'm talking to you from heaven." And the nun finally looked up and she said, "You be quiet now. I'm talking to your mother." And that's like a legit actual joke that my grandmother told me. And it is great because it just sort of.
So relatable.
Like, it, right? It just kind of humorously does wink at the fact that Catholics. Absolutely, or many Catholics. I don't know about all Catholics, but like for many Catholics, Marian worship is a thing, and we do venerate Mary.
Just the Mary. Like I get a little nativity set, and I get rid of the rest of them.
Yeah.
I just take the mom, and just put her with my spider plant.
Isn't that your spider plant? Which also is a mom because spider plants have little babies.
Can I tell you guys about the nativity set I made as a little child?
Absolutely.
Yes, I don't know if this will make it into the podcast.
Anything goes, almost.
So when I was about 6 or 7 years old, I decided in early December to make a nativity scene. And so I got a big box and I got my dad to help me put like a light bulb in it, like an uncovered just like light bulb to be or above it to be the star. And I enlisted my dad's help on a lot of this. I got him to help me make like a little manger and I cut up yellow construction paper to make straw for the manger. And then I went looking for different things that I could use to represent the various people. And animals in this scene. And so I found this little plastic doll that was definitely supposed to represent a girl, and that was Jesus. And then I went looking for something to be Joseph, and I settled on a hand puppet of Lamb Chop, the like PBS child show character. That
Lamb
was Joseph.
Chop is also a girl.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Canonically?
Yeah.
In the Lamb Chop universe, the mythos.
A Lamb Chop is a bratty little girl.
That's amazing. Yeah. So Lamb Chop was Joseph. And then I found a Barbie that had a blue dress.
Yes.
And I knew that Mary had a blue dress. So there was like Barbie to be Mary. And I set up this whole thing. And so all girls, the whole thing. And then so my mom has this childhood friend who had kids my age, and they would come over to help us decorate the Christmas tree, and we would go to their house to celebrate Hanukkah. And so they came over, and my mom was like, "You have to see Laura's nativity scene." And her like Jewish childhood friend is like really giving that a side eye. And my mom's
like,
"No,
do I have to see it?
Do I have to?
Do you have to subject me to more hegemony?"
Right, exactly. That's what my mom's friend is thinking. And so my mom's like, "No, you have to go." And so we all troop up the stairs to my bedroom, and my mom's friend laughed until she cried about this. And so we decided it was my like Unitarian Universalist, like pagan feminist lamb chop nativity scene.
Interspecies nativity scene.
Yes. Lesbian interspecies.
Oh, God. Lesbian interspecies.
It's fantastic.
I think there's a deviant art for that.
Oh, no.
So, Laura, do you know, what do you know? Of course, you know something about this, about the process by which Mary of Nazareth kind of came to incorporate all these other people. Because I vaguely am aware of that.
Yeah.
But that's kind of it.
So it seems to happen in different parts of the world. And the one I know best is Mexico. I spent several years doing archaeology work in Mexico. So in Mexico City, there's this basilica to the Virgin of Guadalupe. And Guadalupe is like a manifestation or a version of Mary of Nazareth.
She's indigenous, right?
Who is indigenous. Yeah, so very Mexican, really, really important to a lot of Mexican Catholics. And so the story of Guadalupe. So Guadalupe, she gets the name Guadalupe from another version of Mary from Spain. And I'm still confused about how exact, like the relationship between the original like Mary of Nazareth and the Marys that appear to people in different places and end up with variations on the name. But so shortly after the conquest of Mexico in like, I think it was in the 1560s, so like 40 years after the conquest, there's this indigenous guy named Juan Diego. So he has a Spanish name, but he's a Aztec guy, basically. And he's a shepherd, and he's up on this hill with his flock. And the this hill has some ruins on it. And so the ruins are of a temple to Tonantzin, an Aztec goddess. And so Tonantzin, the to means our, Nantli is mother, and seen is a reverential suffix. So it basically means our honored mother.
Oh, that's a mother goddess.
Yes. Yeah, nice. So it's a mother goddess. Like, and so, okay. Yeah. So Aztec goddesses in general, they all, like Aztec deities often like, they don't divide, they're not discrete entities from each other in the way that some anthropologists would like them to be. But Tonantzin is certainly a mother goddess and sometimes shows up in different myths doing different things that are sometimes contradictory with each other. But she's definitely mom. She's our honored mom. And so there's ruins of this temple up there. The Spanish have tried to destroy it. But Juan Diego would have known that this was like Tonantzin's hill, right? And so he's up there with his flock, and Mary appears to him and says, build me a church here. And he's like a poor shepherd guy. He does not have the power to build a church. So he goes to the bishop and he says, I saw Maria, she says, to build her a church up on the hill where Tonantzin's temple used to be.
Oof.
And the bishop goes, Mary would never appear to someone like you. You're just like a poor indigenous guy. And so he goes back and Mary appears to him again and is like, so you're going to build a church? And he says, well, you know, I told the bishop who has the power to build a church, and the bishop didn't believe me. I think this maybe happens another time exactly the same way. And then, so I think it's the third time because it's usually the third time. So, okay, so Juan Diego is like going back and forth between Mary and the bishop, who doesn't believe him because the bishop is racist and classist and
right,
just
a jerk.
He's a colonizer jerk. And so in order to prove that, like, yes, she is indeed appearing to Juan Diego and the bishop should believe Juan Diego, Mary makes a rose bush grow on the hill next to the ruins and says, pick these roses, wrap them up in your cloak and bring them down to the bishop. And these are roses that like wouldn't grow in Mexico. And so it's a miracle to prove to him. Mm-hmm. And so Juan Diego does this, brings the cloak down to the bishop, opens the cloak, and not only is it full of the roses, but when they clear away the roses, the image of the Virgin of Guadalupe is like magic, miraculously like painted on the shawl.
Wow.
And so there's a basilica with this shawl, supposedly the shawl, in Mexico City. and it's enormous. It's on the hill. There are like several different chapels. They built a new basilica because too many people were coming. You actually go and there are these like moving walkways underneath it because people were just standing there and other people couldn't see it. So now you have to like go on this moving walkway and go back and forth underneath it, which is a little strange. But it's this huge like complex. They have masses all the time and people lighting candles. And it's a Catholic church. And she's basically, I don't know if she's literally the patron saint of Mexico. I think she is. If she isn't, she basically is in the hearts and minds of people. Okay. Even if it isn't official. And so there it is, built on top of the shrine to our honored mother.
That is deep mom lore.
You always knew, didn't you, mother? You always knew. Mothers always do. You always knew, didn't you, mother? I was a stranger in this world.
Thanks for joining us this week. Mothers and Others is hosted by Julian K. Jarbo and Caro Narby and recorded at Podcast Garage in Alston, Massachusetts. We hope that you can join us again next time as we ponder the eternal questions: who is she, and how does she feel about it?